The arbitration deadline has come and gone, and still no long-term contract for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. What does it all mean? Good evening, everybody. It is Thursday, January 9th, and welcome to episode 227 of Buds and Blue Jays. It's your place for all things related to the Toronto Blue Jays. I'm Jesse Burrell, joined as always by Jesse Tricio, and today on the show, the Toronto Blue Jays were able to come to some arbitration agreements with a bunch of players. In fact, all seven of them were able to come to an agreement here, but most notably, we did not get any long-term extensions from any of our players, most notably Vladimir Guerrero Jr. We'll talk about all that on this episode. Plus, we got some Roky Sasaki rumors, and it's projection season. Steamer has come out with their projections. We're going to dive through all of those, see which ones stand out to us, what it could mean for the Blue Jays going forward, and maybe, just maybe, this team might be a little better than we think it could be going into the 2025 season. But first, Jesse, good evening. Thank you for joining me tonight. How are you?
Oh, it's good as it can be, being up since 4 this morning. We'll do the work grind, dad life. You know how it is.
Hey, there well, you don't, stops.
But exactly. You may not know what dad life part, but you know the work grind and all that until you see us on the billboards.
Mm-hmm. I also know what it's like to be a passionate Blue Jays fan. And even in the early parts of January, when it's minus 17 outside and baseball is the furthest thing on some people's minds, we are knee deep in the transactions. And let's just dive in to the biggest headline of the week. And that is just simply this. The Blue Jays and first baseman Vladimir Guerrero Jr. have avoided arbitration to a one-year $28.5 million deal. It is quite a nice bump from the, I believe it was $19.9 million he made last season in arbitration, winning the case, by the way, against the Blue Jays. It becomes the third highest salary that any player has received in arbitration, behind only Juan Soto and Shohei Ohtani. It is quite a big bump, and now he is officially 1 year away free agency. Jesse, no long-term deal here for Vlad, at least not yet. And $28.5 million comes in just a little less than what MLB Trade Rumors projected at $29.4. I want to hear your thoughts. What is your takeaway when this came across the wire today?
Sad it wasn't long-term, but at least it gives the Jays front office possibly some ground to work on the long-term deal and see where his price range for season is or where they can, what numbers they can play around for the future, because everyone's, the other day they were saying that they were $100 million apart and he's going to be a Red Sox. Now, with these numbers, he'll still be in the AL East and could possibly still be a Blue Jay. And again, too, like you've seen that Hector Gomez, like tweeted before we came on, was saying that now they are in the works of a possible extension, which he's been wrong a couple of times, but also right a lot of times. So take it with a grain of salt, but it definitely is something to monitor and see what comes after this arbitration deal.
Yes, to reference the Hector Gomez quote you are talking about, he said that the Blue Jays are coming up with a second offer towards Vladimir Guerrero Jr. This one, and I believe the exact quote said, closer to what Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is asking for. I don't exactly know what that means. You've mentioned Hector Gomez has said stuff all the time. He said Anthony Santander's been a Blue Jay for probably about 3.5 weeks now. Still no confirmation on that, but we'll wait and see. He was right about Teoscar Hernandez and the trade way back when, so he has been right. He definitely has a source in the Dominican Republic where a lot of the people in Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s camp are. Going back to the arbitration settlement here, it's progress, I suppose, that the Blue Jays camp and Vlad's camp can agree on what they think his value is worth this season. So that is a plus, right? Over his 3 arbitration years, they only had to go to a hearing one time. Right, they were able to get together on this here. So we know then there is a chance that these two sides can meet up. And I'm taking that as a positive here for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and maybe his long-term chances here.
Oh, definitely. It can help. And like again, last year it was over $1 million. I'm glad this year we didn't have to go to the arbitration case, because I feel like if we went this year, it could have been really ugly and possibly the signs that Vladdy won't be here long term.
Yes, and I want to mention the fact, too, that we did avoid not only arbitration with Vlad, but all seven of our arbitration players. You might remember a few years ago the whole Corbin Burns situation when he went to arbitration with the Milwaukee Brewers. Basically, arbitration sucks because you got to go to tell an arbiter that you don't think this player is worth the money that he wants. And you have to come up with reasons why they are bad. I remember in the Corbin Burns case, the Milwaukee Brewers basically blamed Corbin Burns for the reason why they didn't make the playoffs that year. You remember stuff like that. I remember when Marcus Stroman was here, he went through saying, he's a character, Marcus Stroman, but I remember he tweeted out something after one of his arbitration hearings that just basically said, I'll never forget the things my own team said about me, you know, the team that I'm supposed to get excited to play for every day. And Jesse, I don't know if you saw the video, it was a few weeks ago now, but Vlad was doing an interview in the Dominican Republic in Spanish, his native language, and they were talking a little bit about last year's arbitration case where he ended up winning the case against the Blue Jays, 18 some million that they filed for. And he said that Ross Atkins wasn't even at the arbitration meeting. He sent like some arbiter or something in his place to kind of go through and give generic stuff. And Vlad didn't like that. They were like, if you're going to argue my salary, like come out and do it yourself. Don't send somebody there. But just a little glimpse and inside of the front office, and maybe another reason why they wanted to make sure they avoided arbitration with all their players today.
No, definitely. And like if you're going to talk bad about me, you know, like in a way for Vlad, like say it to my face, like that's like gambling. Like,
yes.
Like, are you really that scared to tell the truth and not look stupid when, you know, rightfully so, I deserve this money, and you showed he deserved more. This $28 million this year, and why he deserved what he got last year.
Yeah, you've got to assume too, the free agent contract that Vlad is going to sign next season is going to be upwards higher than the $28 million AAV he's getting this year. Even if he has a subpar season this year, he's still so young. The bat speed is still going to be there. Like even if he gets hurt and doesn't spend much time, which knock on wood, none of us want, he's still going to be very, very good and make a lot of money going forward. So that is very good. I had one more thought on Vlad here. And you know what? I lost it. It'll come back to me and we'll get back to it a little bit later. But we are hopeful. And obviously if the Blue Jays and Vlad can come up to a long-term agreement, we will get on. We will talk about that, which many Blue Jays fans would like here. Jesse, any more thoughts on Vlad and his extension, or should we start talking about some of the other Blue Jays who reached contract arbitration?
We've talked about Vlad's contract for pretty much this whole offseason since that's yes, all there is. So let's give some other players because it is Vlad's team, but there is some supporting cast that needs some love.
The Blue Jays were able to reach agreement on all seven players, like we said, Vlad at $28.5 million. They were also able to reach an agreement with Dalton Varsho, our center fielder, who will make $8.2 million this season. Alejandro Kirk will make $4.6 million. Alec Manoah will make $2.2 million. Zach Pop will make $900,000. Ernie Clement, just shy of $2 million, $1.975. Nick Sandland, who we got from the Guardians in the Andrés Giménez trade, will make $1.63 million. And this also includes Eric Swanson, I suppose, who did sign a one-year $3 million deal earlier this offseason. You could count him. And the other two arbitration-eligible players, Genesis Cabrera and Jordan Romano, were both cut from the team, so we do not have to worry about them anymore. Overall, as a whole, the transaction or the MLB trade rumors arbitration predictor had the Jays spending about $51.3 million in arbitration. If you add up all those salaries, it's $51.005 million that the Blue Jays spend. So according to projections, they saved about $300,000 here, which the Blue Jays will take. They're a business. They love saving money and all that good stuff there. So no long-term extensions for any of those players. Was there any number there that specifically surprised you or maybe a player that got more or less than you think they should have?
900,000 can buy a lot of toilet paper for that.
I know, man. We've never liked really Zach Poop on this show or Zach Pop on this show. But, you know, hey, not even $1 million for 1 year of a middle reliever who, you know, does have a good sinker. If he could throw strikes, could be okay. I can see why the Blue Jays have done it. But I can also see how your disdain for Zach Pop continues here.
Oh, until he turns into like the elite and win like reliever of the year, and turns into like Emmanuel Clase, then maybe I can like I'll go back to his original name.
Yeah, I don't think any of us think it's going to happen that way, Jesse. But what are you going to do when Zach Pop becomes like our consistent seventh inning guy next season? You're going to have to sign the apology letter here, buddy.
If he becomes it, these gray hairs will probably be hopefully lessening, and I don't see that happening anytime soon.
All right, I'm probably with you, but we will see. In terms of money made in the bullpen, I did look this up. Obviously, Chad Green's making the most. He's got that $10.5 million deal. Jimmy Garcia's next with $7.5 million. Nick Sandlund is on that list as well. And who am I missing? Eric Swanson with his $3 million deal are the only four relievers that'll be making more money out of the bullpen than Zach Pop this year. So, hey, $900,000, if you have to eat that buyout, it's not going to hurt you. They did just save $300,000, might I add, on this arbitration process. But yeah, $900,000, a slight raise from what he got last year, did Zach Pop.
Yeah, I'm surprised he was tendered, let alone getting a raise.
Well, the Blue Jays need relievers, and he is one of them, and maybe they're bouncing on a bounce-back performance. Who knows? We will touch on that as we get a little closer to the season. Jesse, I want to talk about three players here that are more defense-first over bat-first guys, and all three of them got raises from their projection MLB trade rumors arbitration numbers, and that is Dalton Varsho, Alejandro Kirk, and Ernie Clement. All got more money than what they were projected for, and Jesse, those three players all are very, very good defensively. I think those three exactly were our three Gold Glove nominee players that we had this year. And it's not surprising one bit to me that the Blue Jays paid more than projected because they love their elite defense and they are willing to pay more for it. Honestly, we should have all seen this coming. We should have known. So, no real surprise.
All well-deserved. And like, again, our three Gold Glove finalists and our team wants to go for that third straight team Gold Glove. That's our aspiration. Why we haven't signed Santander or Alonso is because we want that third full glove as a team.
I really do feel like Ross Atkins and company are sitting there in their front office and they're thinking, yeah, the World Series overrated. Let's get that team Gold Glove. They like the gold. It's probably shinier or something. I think they're confused, but defense is great. Defense doesn't necessarily win championships, as the old saying has gone growing up. Any thought on Nick Sandlund getting $1.63 million? We haven't seen a pitch yet. We don't know a ton about Nick Sandlund, so it's hard to really make a gripe there. Or maybe the other name that happened in arbitration here. Alec Manoah making $2.2 million as he recovers from Tommy John. Do you have a thought on any of those?
Right now, I'm thinking Sandlin could possibly be a steal, like steal, especially with him working with Pistol Pete and like what he's done with the bullpen in the past. So maybe like that could be a steal. But I feel like Manoah, if you look at what Manoah probably would have been making if he didn't go off the rail the 1 year and have Tommy John, that's a bargain for what the caliber of pitcher he was his first 2 years.
Right. We get Alec Manoah so cheap now because of his injury and poor play when he was down in the minors for a long time. We got another year of control and his arbitration levels can stay so low because he was so bad for that little stretch of time after his Cy Young caliber seasons. That $2.2 million this year, if he looks good in the second half and you have him, say he even takes an arbitration jump to like $8 million next year from the good production you know you can get from Alec Manoah, absolutely a win. We will take that 10 times out of 10.
Oh, 100%. Like, again, he can only go up from how bad he was. And, like, the start before he got hurt, like, against Tampa that I was at, like, he looked like his old self.
Mm-hmm. So, it five starts for Alec Manoah. He looked good. He was suppressing hits. You know, the strikeouts still weren't there, and the stuff on his pitches weren't all the way back. But we will see how he looks as he recovers from his, I guess it's internal brace surgery, not full-on Tommy John. But we will see going forward into this season. All right, Jesse, no more thoughts on arbitration, eh? We're done. We're not going to any cases. We can move on past this, yes?
Until they extend after that deal, then, yeah, we should go buy it.
Okay. I want to take this time now and talk a little bit about Roky Sasaki. It has been a while since we brought him up on this episode. I know early in the offseason, we had talked about our dream targets. I had mentioned Roky a few times. I know you had been intrigued by the talent and the upside that he has. We're getting close to his official signing time. A lot of reports have gone out there saying that he is going to sign after January 15th, which is less than a week away. So if we take our normal weekly episode podcast, it'll be in the rookie society era. And Scott Mitchell from TSN tweeted a month ago that, yes, there's a lot of Blue Jays people all in. And he brought that back to the forefront today. And with a lot of rumors going around about a mystery team really getting in on Roki Sasaki, I'm really starting to believe that with how desperate that we've heard that quote several times about this Blue Jays team is, that we are really making one more final push on Roki Sasaki here. Now, could it just be what we've done each of the last two off seasons where we are building this up just to get hurt again? Probably, Jesse, and I am prepared to get hurt again if this indeed does happen. But I want to get your thoughts on, one, the player, and two, if you really think he could be a really good fit here.
Fit? 100%. Like, a guy averages on, like, 102 with his fastball, has an A-plus splitter. His slider, like, all his off-speed pitches are five-star. Like, he is... as advertised, but yes, like a friend of the show, Dave Holden, said he has pitched a lot at a young age. But if you go like 20 plus innings or almost 20 innings of no hit ball or perfect pitching, that will play in any league. Like this guy,
it's so hard to do. You can't do that. Like nobody.
No, does exactly. That. Unless I play on easy mode in like MLB the Show, but I could probably do it. But that's still near impossible. Like, literally, he's only 23. He'll fit in with the young core, like, the young kids of the Buffalo Boys and all that. Like, because he is around the same age. The Jays have went to Japan the last few years to scout him, like, personally.
I think Ross has gone to Japan to see him, too, yes.
Exactly. And, like, this, I would love, like, do I see it happening? Could we be that mystery team? Possibly. Am I ready to use the meme photo I've been using whenever we lose out on someone when I tweeted out? Yes, I'm ready for that too. have I been hurt? Like, is an abusive relationship and like toying with my emotions? Yes, but that's any Toronto sports team. So like, this is what the pain and suffering we deal with and slash enjoy, but also the excitement when it actually comes true.
Eventually, we're going to strike a bingo on this bingo card. It's going to happen. We are going to get somebody, but we are now into the second week of January. And still crickets. Sorry, apologies, Jimmy Garcia, but still crickets on that free agent front. I've said it before, and I'll say it again here. Roki Sasaki is the best pitcher who is currently not pitching in Major League Baseball right now. If there was a draft tomorrow and he was in it, he would be the number one overall pick with a bullet. And plus, Jesse, young and cheap for years. He clearly doesn't care about just getting the money, because if it was all about money, he would have stayed in Japan for two more years, came over when he was 25 and could have made a bunch more money. He wants to go somewhere where he is good. And I think the stories you were hearing from his camp is he wants to be somewhere with a team that can get the most out of him to really get Roki Sasaki to be the best pitcher that he can be. And the Blue Jays, you know, for all their faults they've had, they have been able to turn out some positive pitching development stories. And I wonder if they can use that on their sales pitch to really get Roki Sasaki in here.
Oh, definitely. Like, look at some, like, just to name a few. Robbie Ray, Steven Matz,
Ross Chris Stripling Bassett. Had his best year ever.
Ross Stripling. Gosman, Gosman was the lead, but now becoming what Berrios, all these elite pitchers that we have developed. You can even say Stroman for a little bit. You can say there's so many pitchers within our history who have worked with Pete Walker. Pistol Pete can cook, and he literally turns friggin' lemons into diamonds when we get them.
And that's the thing. And I think that's probably what the Blue Jays are focusing on to go along with their good players development complex they have in Florida, that they can really try to get the most out of Roki Sasaki. And I think that would be their sales pitch to try to get him here. And I would love to see it happen. We know the Jays, with their pursuit of Shohei Ohtani last winter, I believe, that they know the Japanese heritage culture. They know what it might take for a Japanese player to come over. The Blue Jays have just had Yusei Kikuchi, a Japanese player that really enjoyed his time here in Toronto. So when you add up all the pieces, there is a very real possibility that he could sign here. It's just, we don't want to get hurt again, you know?
No, exactly. And like, there's so many other like great, I'll say great fan favorite Japanese players that play for the Jays. Like, you got Munenori Kawasaki, like, playing in to say like Toronto too is with the ring culture and like diversity in that city and all these like is perfect for like Sasaki to come here too, like, where like, yes, he may not, he's in a whole nother country, mm-hmm. but it wouldn't feel like he's in like a foreign land too because of how diverse Toronto is too.
It's a very interesting point. I agree with Jesse, and we will talk about it more if it happens. I don't love talking about rumors when they, you know, they're just that, they're rumors, but we got something. One point, kind of backtracking just a little bit to the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Hector Gomez tweet. Sportsnet just aired that quote. They don't usually do that. So take that for what it's worth. Maybe there might be something to this behind the scenes, or maybe it's just they're trying to build up speculation. Who knows, Jesse? Who knows? But we will keep tabs on that going forward. Quick question, my guy. Did you see the video going around of Joey Loperfido's new swing?
Yeah, it definitely is intriguing. Like, a couple of things I've noticed from his leg kick's not as high, and it looks also that he's attacking the ball and not waiting for it to like travel to him.
Yes, keep talking just for a minute. I'm going to try to see if I can get the clip on video here for us. But yeah, Joey Loperfido, talk to me about the player and what your expectations are for him this year.
Well, definitely, again, being one of the integral parts of that UCQQT trade and versatility in the outfield, can play all three, has A-plus speed, can even play some first in a pinch. Like, when he came up with the Astros, he hit, I think it was 10 home runs in 13 games. Like, the power is there. Yes, it was the Pacific League where balls fly out like you're using a slingshot. But, like, he has the tools and all that. And I feel like him lowering his leg kick a little bit will help him time out the ball. And, like, especially with the mentality from Popkins and – I keep trying to blank, but the other hitting assistant, they want to attack the ball, and eliminating that leg kick, he'll be able to freaking just explode and drive it out of the park.
Yeah, it might be a little tough to see on the video, but if you're watching about it, yeah, you're saying he's cut the leg kick just a little bit here. He's trying to get up there. I'll play it one more time as it's going to load here. This is from the baseball performance studio where I guess Joey Loperfido has been hitting. And yeah, you can really see he's not as upright too. His bat is a little lower in the zone. He was on MLB Network's radio, and I was listening to an interview he did the other day. Joey Loperfido was saying things like he wants to attack the baseball more. Like, he wants to get them there, especially in that fastball at the top of the zone. I think when he was in Houston, that was the pitch he was really crushing last year. And if you look at the swings in this video, a lot of these are fastballs up in the zone, and Joey is putting a very good swing on that. So I like seeing that from Joey Loperfido, and is probably pretty good. I did some metric digging, Jesse, to just what Joey Loperfido did last year, because now that we have the bat tracking data, we can kind of look at this stuff. Joey Loperfido's swing was the longest on the team. So long swings can be good for getting bat speed through the zone, can be good for developing power, but you're also going to miss the baseball a lot, which Joey Loperfido did. I think he had the lowest percentage of his swings that were quote-unquote competitive, not counting Kevin Biggio. Kevin Biggio was lower, but the second lowest on the team. And there were some other numbers too that correlate with a long swing. But yeah, it's there are some tools here, right? Including the swing speed. And I think that's what the Blue Jays really liked. Like, he's only behind Varsho, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and Addison Barger, who we give props to his swing speed all the time. So there is a very real tool skill set, and there definitely is an untapped potential with Joey Loperfido that I think the Blue Jays might be trying to explore this year.
No, definitely. And, like, seeing, too, like, where his bat is. Last year, his bat was, like, way more straight up, higher, like, hands above the head. Now him bringing his hands down means that he's closer to the plate, like the barrel plane, where he can like have all that power instead of had to do like a big loop to get into the hitting zone.
Give me a number right now. How many home runs does Joey Loprofito hit in 2025?
If he's getting regular at bats,
let's assume he is.
Okay, 23.
I like. Good call. I'm gonna go the under of 18, but I think there might be more production, some more extra base hits in there for Joey Loprofito. Definitely a guy that we're going to follow quite a bit during spring training. And Jesse, one more bit of news before we dive into projections. A guy we talked quite a bit about two episodes ago when Scott Belford was on our show. But Hagen Danner, our friend Hagen D, Hagen Danner, who we both have really liked, who I guess did fall off just a tick, who was released, did end up signing on with a new team. He is officially a Seattle Mariner. So no more Hagen Danner in this system. We talked about it at the time. We didn't love it, but now is officially farewell, Hagen Danner.
Well, a shame, and he's showing a couple of former Jays in that bullpen, and Trent Thornton and Tyler Saucedo, and enjoy the West Coast. You'll be missed, and don't punish the Jays so much.
Please, yes, because I wish him nothing but the best. Him going to Seattle could be very good. Chris from the Coach of Suns, if you are listening, we promised this bullpen arm might be better than what Jimmy Garcia was for you after we traded him to, and what Justin Turner was for you guys simply at the deadline. But Hagen Danner is legit. Real guy. We will be following his career very, very closely. All right, Jesse, unless there's any more breaking news that has rolled across the wire at 10:30 at night, which I have yet to see some, do you want to start talking the 2025 Toronto Blue Jays? Start looking at some projections and seeing what could be from this 2025 team.
Let's do it. Let's see how painful it could be.
All right, so this is painful. Man, I really hope it's not painful. There might be some, though, in here that you don't like. So for those of you listening, I've looked at these projections. I've been staring at these things since the World Series ended, to be honest. Jesse, you have not seen many of these, so I think this could be a little fun where I could just tweet out a projection, and I almost want you to tell me what player on the Blue Jays you think that is projected for that stat line. Does this make sense? Well, I'll give you the line. You try to tell me the player. Okay. This will be a little fun. And then we can talk a little bit about the player. But here is a projection for a Toronto Blue Jay. They think he's going to hit 263 with a 317 on base, a 103 WRC plus, hit 13 home runs, steal 26 bags. Give me the player. The stolen bases should be the biggest hint here.
That's where I'm thinking.
Yeah. The 26 bags are the highest projected on the team right now.
Varsho?
It's not Varsho. He's a new guy. It's a guy we haven't talked about much since this trade.
Andrés Giménez.
So Andrés Giménez there, yes. The full stat line, 263, 317, 393. A WRC plus over 103. We've talked about him when we got the trade that the Blue Jays do believe in the bat a little bit. Zach from At the Corner, who we had on our show, believes also that Andrés Giménez's bat is going to turn around a little bit. 13 home runs, a 5% walk rate, which is quite low, but he's going to cut the strikeout rate down to 16.8%. 3.5 war for Andrés Giménez as his projections this season. Simple question that I'm going to ask you for a lot of these. Does he do better than that or worse than that in 2025?
I think that's just right. Maybe I would like the stolen bases a little bit like in the 30s, just because I feel like we're going to implement speed more with this roster as it is. Home runs I'm fine with, but I feel like he'll possibly be a five to six war player, not three and a half.
Yeah, so he's going to, you think that Andrés Giménez is going to get back to his 2021 ways where like the BABIP gets inflated a little bit, he finds a way to hit the slider again, and next thing you know, he's getting down ballot MVP votes?
I definitely feel like he can find his way, because sometimes change of scenery is a good thing. Sure. And like I said, I feel like he can be like how our the early 90s Robbie Alomar was. Like, that's what he could be with the defensive and like the importance on that team.
Hey, comparing any player to Robbie Alomar is a hell of a comp, my guy. If that happens, obviously, like, buy a lottery ticket right now if you can predict that outcome for Andrés Giménez. I don't think it's going to be anywhere close to that. Two very subpar seasons And I know his numbers against the slider were very, very bad. So he's got to learn to hit that pitch first. If he can do that, maybe he can hit a little bit lefties a little bit. Maybe the BABIP luck gets in hand and maybe he adds to that power. Then maybe we're looking at like a 5-win player. Maybe. But yeah, I think 3.5, just mostly based on good base running and good defense, is probably where he's going to end up.
Oh, definitely. Like, I expect, I have high hopes for him just because of how much like Zach has sold me on him, and then seeing some of this like more close of him, I'm like, I can see it.
Jesse, I think what it is we're drinking the Kool-Aid. We're getting close to spring training. Like, Joey Loperfido's hitting 23 bombs here. Andrés Giménez is going to turn into Roberto Alomar. Then I guess I should give you this next projection if you like something that's a little wild and a little outlandish. This one should be much easier to guess, Jesse. But who is projected for a 297 average, 375 on base, a 155 WRC plus with 33 home runs and 104 RBIs? I think you might know who this be, but take your name anyway.
Is it a $28.5 million man?
It is. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is absolutely the man, the guy who is now $28.5 million richer. And hey, the Steamer projections love Vladdy. And coming off the season he just had, how could you not? 104 ribbies is going to be fantastic. A 4.9 war for a guy who doesn't run the bases well and a guy who does not defend well either. Most of that coming off the power of his bat looks pretty good to me. 10% walk rate too, which is second, projected to be second most on the team. I guess third if you count RJ Schreck, who they're giving up rate to, but we won't do that for the purpose of this exercise. And the 232 ISO, by far highest on the team. Does that season get MVP votes for you? And do you think he'll be better than that? Or is it worse than that going into this season?
Two numbers I think would be a little bit higher would be obviously the home run total, because I feel like he can get to the 40 mark, if not higher, like he did in 2021. And I feel like the average is a little low for him. I feel like he'll be a 300 hitter.
Okay, 297 is pretty crazy. Like, it's nobody hits really 300 in the major leagues anymore, right? I think major league average is, what, 225 or something like that? So they are giving Vladdy a pretty lofty projection here, especially for like the first 2 months of last season, where like Vlad's just a singles hitter now. But, you know, there could also be contract year bump, right? Maybe he wants to have one of those, like, you know, shut the hell up seasons where he just goes out and mashes, and it could be one of the best contract years we've ever seen. Maybe
Juan Soto,
like, yeah, like a Juan Soto, except, you know, we win the World Series, so instead of the Yankees. But yeah, it won't happen. Good projection for Vladdy. I think the most thing I noticed about him here, though, is again another 150 games played. He has played 150 or more games every single year that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has been a Toronto Blue Jay. So worth noting. They say the best ability is availability, and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has proven that over the last 2 years. So worth noting.
Well, definitely. And like, people say thinking like is Vladdy's gonna break down. I hope it doesn't, but like just him being on the field gives us a chance. So, which is something we need.
Absolutely, Jesse. I'm going to give you another name, another higher end name we should probably talk about here. This player projected to hit 278 with a 324 on base, a 118 WRC plus, going to end up with 20 home runs on the nose, 77 RBIs, 10 stolen bases, and a 3.9 war season is what Steamer projects for this player on the Toronto Blue Jays. Give me your name. Who's it going to be?
The new
Bo Bichette. So yes, that was exactly Bo Bichette, the projection that I laid out for him. Any surprises before we dive deeper onto what that projection says about Bo Bichette?
I just hope he can actually stay on the field. That's literally like the projection is great, but if he's on the training table most of the year again, then it is what it is. But if he really wants to leave Toronto, I feel like those numbers are probably going to be inflated because of the I want my money type of deal.
Yeah, I mean, Bo Bichette did come from money. Like, his dad was a Major League Baseball player, so it's not like he's starving for money. But Bo does seem like the type of guy that's like that wants to stick it to you a little bit, and going out there and putting up a monster season and then running away and taking the bag absolutely seems like something Bo Bichette would want to do. I'll talk more about what I really think Bobichet's going to do in a later episode when we get more to, like, maybe our bold takes and our player projections and stuff like that. But two numbers from the projections that really stand out to me. One, like you said, the games played number, 143 games played for Bobichet. I think you and I would sign up for that absolutely every day if Bobichet is playing 143 games at shortstop. And the power numbers to me, they have Bobichet slugging 441. That's more than George Springer. That's more than Alejandro Kirk. I think that's actually second most on the team behind only Vlad, is Bobichet with his 441 slugging. That's higher than what Orelvis Martinez is projected for, who probably has more power than Bobichet. So the under the hood numbers for Bo last year really screams that the power was disappearing a little bit, but the projections seem to believe it's coming back. Jesse, do you believe the power is coming back for Bobichet?
I believe it will. I feel like the saying is, like, a lot of, you play baseball and myself playing baseball, you know, a lot of your power is from your lower half. So if you right. only have like one calf and like one like fully healthy leg, that's gonna put a dip either on like your timing or even your the power. Just so I feel like him having been fully healthy, knock on wood, and having like two solid base underneath him, he definitely, I feel like his power will go up. Do I think he'll hit 20? I hope so. But slight being the second highest slugging percent, I really don't think it. I think it'll be someone else, like someone that's either not on this roster yet or someone that is just going to surprise us.
Yeah, so just for reference, here's what Bobichet's slugging percentage has been over the last three seasons. In 2022, it was 469, very good. 475 in 2023, even better. And then dipped to 322 this past season. Absolute fall off the cliff. I think the projections are betting more on track record, and they're looking at what Bobichet did the 3 years prior, where he got down ballot MVP votes and he was that guy. And they think, well, regression to the mean is going to happen. He's going to come back and be that guy. I find it hard to see what I saw last season and think that Bo can just magically snap out of that. I might be more on the lower side than other people are on Bobichet, but you could be right. If it is just he was hurt all year, never got strength in that lower half, and it can all come back and he's completely healthy, then you could be onto something here.
Yeah, I really hope it was because of the injury, but like again, like I'm definitely on siding with you too with the regression of all the just being a shortstop and playing in Toronto too. Like, yes, it's dirt, but it's still not like all the natural type of infield. So it could possibly be regression already.
Yeah, we will see. It's going to be one of the biggest storylines the Blue Jays have. We're going to talk a lot more about Bobichet as we get in closer to the season. I just thought it was good to lay out what the baseline projections are. So later in the season, when Bobichet is either going off or when he is playing terribly, we can go back and we can reference what this projection was for Bobichet. Before we move on to the next guy, like we did for the home run total there, can you give me a home run total for Bobichet? What's his number settle at this season?
I'm going to say 17.
17? And I was going to go 14 for Bobichet. So, Latines, obviously he will provide offensive production in other ways, but still not the 20 home run guy we had seen in years past from Bobichet. So, worth noting.
No, definitely. Like, unless he has some, like, that leg in 2021 when he had almost 30, I believe, or, like, if I'm correct, he had, like, all the thump around him, then they had a pitch to him, and he was just getting cookies down the middle, and he was teeing him up because he was doing his early form of Setembo.
Another reason, too, why getting lineup protection around this lineup to make it deeper will help your guys perform. But anyways, very much needed. Jesse, let's talk about this player. Now, this player is only projected for 81 games, so we're getting a little deeper down in the roster. But I think is a very intriguing name, too, to analyze going forward in the season. This player projected hit 218 with that 317 on base, so the same on base percentage that Andre Jimenez has. A 104 WRC plus, so slightly above league average. They're projecting 11 home runs in those 81 games played with a 0.7 WAR and 4 stolen bases. Any idea who this player could be.
I have two names in my mind.
Give them to me.
Will Wagner?
It's not Will Wagner. This player has been on the team. This will be his third year with the Blue Jays.
Ernie Clement?
Nah, it's not Ernie Clement. It's the other roommates. Who's the other one that's left?
Oh, David Schneider.
David Schneider, yes. And there are a lot of names in that section of the roster that we're going to have to dive into. But I thought this was quite an interesting projection for the Blue Jays here and with David Schneider. The 11 home runs surprised me. The positive WRC plus also surprised me. And they really do like the ability to get on base. In fact, they have David Schneider's walk rate as the highest on the team. So they think more percentages of his at-bats are going to turn into walks than guys like Vladimir Guerrero Jr., than guys like Will Wagner or Alejandro Kirk. They think it's David Schneider, which is interesting because he swung and missed at a lot of stuff last year. And pitchers are going to throw the ball in the middle of the plate because they think they can get him out. And I'm going to be honest, David Schneider looked dreadful last season, especially down the stretch. Don't look at his game logs for the last like 2 or 3 weeks of the season. They were not good for David Schneider. But what are your takes on this projection from David Schneider this year?
Definitely surprised that he's going to get 81 games because I feel like he needs to be pretty much in the minors, not just half the season, probably prove it until you find the Babe Schneider again, like where he like his position is a cluster with us, like at second in the outfield. There's a lot of players who are either right behind you, like nipping at your heels, or that have surpassed you that are still haven't made their major league debut. And like, I feel like his days are numbered. Like, I don't even think he'll make it to the end of spring training as a Jay.
Wow. I think he will, just because there's a lot of guys on the back end of the 40-man roster who doesn't, and I'm pretty sure David Schneider still does have options. The ISO for the projection here has him fourth highest on the team. So Vlad, Varsho, Orelvis Martinez are the only players they are projecting Davis to have a higher ISO than David Schneider. That means they're going to think he's going to be better than George Springer, Bo Bichette, Addison Barger, who is a guy you or I really like, Joey Loperfido in his 20-some home runs, Ernie Clement, Alan Rodin. Like, there are some names up there that should be productive with the bat that they think David Schneider is going to have a bigger bounce back from. And Jesse, when you really think about the career of David Schneider so far, he was the best hitter on the planet. He was Babe Ruth for this first, like, maybe 3 weeks in the big leagues, and then really nothing since then. And it's kind of hard for me to see that come back. And especially now when everyone's healthy, the Blue Jays made a trade for Andrés Giménez. That cuts in dramatically to David Schneider's playing time. Maybe you form a right-handed platoon with him and one of your lefties, like a Nathan Lucas or something, or an Addison Barger, and you run him as the strong side platoon. But you need to see more out of that spot from David Schneider. Or like I said, he's not going to be around for that long.
No, exactly. Like, he literally, I feel like it's almost like what Ernie Clement did a couple of years ago when he beat out Espinal. Like, okay. I feel like David Schneider needs to do something like that, even though he has options. Like, if he doesn't perform, I feel like they'll just like DFA him and like send him packing to somewhere.
That would suck. That would suck. Because David Schneider's so fun, right? When that Babe Schneider era when he was on was going really well, but I'm with you, my guy. Like, it's, you know, he was never that high of a prospect. He hit pretty well in Buffalo. He got a call up, lit the world on fire, and then his bad. We've had, I think, a large enough sample size now from David Schneider, too. Now, baseball's weird. Progression isn't always linear. I get all that. So maybe, you know, the fact that he's shown for a short time he can be elite, he can do it again. But I don't think I'm buying the hype here. Give me two predictions for David Schneider. One, we'll do the home run total because that's been kind of fun. But two, also give me a games played in the major number for David Schneider this season.
36. And okay, no, games not because played. Games played, and he'll match his jersey number.
Okay.
And home runs, I'll say 5.
Okay, so the projections happen for 81 and 11 apiece there, which I think I lean closer to more your side than the projection side. But, you know, we'll see how the season goes because there's a reason these games are played on the field and not on paper, right?
Exactly, one more and point. I would love to be proven wrong.
Like with all this, we want nothing but the best for these Blue Jays too here, right? We're not crapping on these players. We want them all to do well. One more position player before we move on to a few of the pitchers here. And this one is an interesting name as well with David Schneider to go along this season. They are projecting this player for only 52 games this year, so keep all that in mind. But a 236 batting average, 311 on base, a 103 WRC+, 9% walk rate, 24% strikeout rate, just 6 home runs and two stolen bases. Jesse, what player am I talking about?
Why do I feel like you're going to say this is our Barger boy?
This is our Barger boy, and this is the projections for Addison Barger, which seem a little low compared to what you and I think he has the capability to do. It's almost like we should maybe flip the Davis Schneider ones and Addison Barger, because I think you and I both would rather have Barger than Davis Schneider, correct?
Oh, 100%. I still feel like Barger, if we don't sign the Bregman or Santander, should be our everyday either third baseman or or in left, or even move Springer to left and just have Barger, because his tools and like quick twitch is just, it's something the Jays need to like spark, like just one of those like a hype players, like kind of like the ones who will crush through a wall, which he would, because nothing can stand in the way because of how much like how ripped he is. Well, like he will be one of those guys who just will do whatever it takes. He kind of like what Springer was when he first showed up.
Sure.
But his body can actually handle it and not just fall apart.
Out of all these younger players on the roster, and there's a few we haven't talked about, like Will Wagner, Alan Roden, we have not talked about this episode. We'll get into them. I want to throw like Orelvis Martinez into this mix as well. With David Schneider, with Ernie Clement, where does Addison Barger fit among those players?
I would personally, like, we've talked about this off the like off air too, is yeah. I would literally have him be our starting right fielder, especially with his arm strength and like just his range too is not something people don't really talk about, his range in the outfield. Like he can. He will be a solid defender, as well as he, like, if he gets more ABs, his numbers will show it. His first time in any level, he tends to struggle, but the following year he'll light it up.
Yeah, it's worth noting too, when Addison Barger came up last year, that I think his girlfriend or wife was just giving birth. Like it was a wild time. Like he was becoming an early dad. You know what it's like early in your child's life. Like your life is kind of thrown upside down. On top of that, having to be in a new city and produce is wild. The range isn't necessarily good for Addison Barger. It's actually quite poor, but the arm strength is immaculate and the sprint speed is better than you think it is for Addison Barger, and good base runner at that too. And plus, like you said, with the tools, some of the best tools I have seen, there is a complete hitter in there. It's just the Jays got to find a way to unlock him. Jesse, true or false? Over the course of the season, Addison Barger beats out George Springer for a job and becomes our everyday right fielder.
True, because I feel like if everything goes the way I would like it, Atkins will be gone, and then the new front office will bite the bullet and finally get to cut ties with Springer.
Okay, you've heard it here. When that does inevitably happen midseason, we want you to make sure you heard it here on January 9th from Buds and Blue Jays of that's what was going to happen with Addison Barger. All right, Jesse, then just give me the same things. Give me a games played prediction and a home run prediction for Addison Barger this year.
Let's go 93 for games played.
Mm-hmm.
And 24 home runs and 65 RBIs.
I like it. I actually think Barger might eclipse the 20 home run plateau here this season. I think he's going to be good. He's a lefty. He's going to see a lot more righties, right? He might not hit against lefties, but if he can be, you know, a 120 WRC plus against right-handed hitters, which he looked that guy towards the second half of the season last year, then I'm in. I'm a barger boy. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. Let's get it in there this year.
There's probably some creatine in, probably some creatine and protein in that barger Kool-Aid.
Absolutely there is. I wouldn't want to drink any of that. I bet you it doesn't taste good, but I bet you it does wonders to the human body. Any other hitter you wanted to look at before we spend the last 10 minutes here looking at pitchers?
No, let's get to the pitchers and possibly the bullpen, but or I should say bullpen. It's not the bullpen yet.
Yeah, no blown saves yet this year, Jesse. It's a new year. We're turning leaves. Maybe the Blue Jays, you know, how bad they underperformed last year. Maybe they'll just overperform this year, and it'll be a thing of wonders. I doubt it, but hey, we can dream. It's early. Optimism's high, right?
You're saying there's a chance.
You're saying there is a chance. Absolutely. All right, let's get into some pitcher projections here. And boy, the Blue Jays starting rotation is quietly projected to be quite poor. A lot of our guys are getting quite older. Gausman took a step back last year. The splitter kind of looked lost a little bit. Chris Bassitt, I think, he walked the most batters out of anyone in baseball last year. I think I've said the stat before on Bassitt, but he had one start last year where he didn't walk a batter, and it was against the White Sox, so I don't even think that counts just because they were so bad. Brios was sturdy, showed flashes of greatness, flashes of inconsistency, and then Bowden Francis, like, what do you make of his season? Dreadful the first half, and then literally the best, like, hit suppression pitcher the game has ever seen in the second half of the season. And then there's Yariel Rodriguez, who is working up his innings total. So you can pick a pitcher. I can throw out their projection if you'd like, or we can do what we did before. I'll read a projection, and then we'll talk about it. How would you like to go about this?
Well, let's continue with the theme we were doing for the first half.
So I will give you a prediction here, and this pitcher is projected to throw 179 innings this season. They got 8.29 Ks per nine. The ERA is going to be about 4.10, 3.2 walks per nine, and a 42% ground ball rate. See if you can predict, get who that starting pitcher is based on that number.
ERA one more time? 4.10?
ERA 4.10, yeah.
Bassitt.
It is Bassitt. Yes, that is the projection for Chris Bassitt here. Coming off quite a bad season. It is also a contract year for Chris Bassitt, might I add you. The guy who can throw a billion different pitches, who's known for his command, but also walks too many guys for a guy who's known for his command. So, Jesse, I want your opinion first before I give mine. What do we make for Chris Bassitt this year?
I feel like if anything, he'll finish as our number five starter just because of one, age, and but also two, just how inconsistent he is and how like just how much like his ailments have will harm at his blow ups. Like, I just think of that game against Oakland now, just the Athletics. Just where it was like 7-0 after the first one. Like, are you kidding? Like, I feel like there's going to be way more of those this year than the last 2 years.
He had a really bad one against the Dodgers too last year. Yeah, that one against Oakland you're talking about, 7 earned runs in 4 innings pitch. He had one against the Dodgers too, 7 earned runs in 2 2/3 innings pitch. And I remember when we signed Chris Bassitt, I looked at his game logs with the Mets, and he had 3 blowups. But that was it. He was very, very good the rest of his. His first year here at Toronto, I think he had 4 blowups, and then he was very good for the rest of it. Last year, it got up to a bunch more, Jesse. And just last year alone, he had 15 starts where he gave up 3 or more earned runs, and 5 where he gave up 5 or more earned runs. And that's a little too much, I would say, for Chris Bassitt, as opposed to only 4 where he didn't give up an earned run, and 2 of them were against the White Sox. Both starts he made there, he did not give up an earned run. So I think it's hard to see things getting better for a guy like Chris Bassitt, who is now, what, 35 years old? Yeah, he'll be 36 years old going into next season. A lot of innings under that belt, too. Like, the stuff never wows you either from Chris Bassitt. I'm really getting to worried, like, he's going to be the guy that is going to have, like, a mid-fives ERA, but the Blue Jays don't have any other starting pitching. They just need him to go out there and chuck 5-6 innings just to get through a ball game, and we'll lose 60% of the starts he makes, and it's going to be a struggle. But that's where my head's at on Chris Bassitt this year.
No, I definitely feel the same way. I feel like he's just going to be there to be there unless we like, as rumors say, trade him and, like, trade him off at the deadline or something. But, like, I feel like he'll probably be one of the more painful starters. And it's not because he's hurt or, like, has the inability. It's just because, again, he's 36 years old this year. And his name's not Verlander or Scherzer. It's not going to – I feel like it's not going to be pretty.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the end of the season and that ERA is anything below 5, I think that's going to be a good look for Chris Bassitt. We're going to talk a lot about him as we get closer to the season as well. Boy, a lot of interesting guys on this roster we've got to talk about a little further. So ERA total at the end of the year, Jesse, higher or lower than that 410 that he's projected for?
I think it's going to be 456.
Okay, and I'm going to go 522. So I do not think it's going to be good. I also don't think he makes 30 starts. I think maybe in the 20s, and either due to bad performance or due to injury, he doesn't quite get there this season. This next pitcher, I want to talk a little bit about. These are the projections for him. They have him making 28 starts this season, 158 innings pitch, 8.27 strikeouts per nine, 2.5 walks per nine, 1.46 home runs per nine, which is by far the most on the Blue Jays pitching staff here. With a 34.5% ground ball rate and a 4.33 ERA, Jesse, who's that pitcher?
Is it Gausman?
It's not Gausman.
Berrios?
It's not Berrios.
That, no, it can't be Francis.
That is what the Fangraphs projections are, the Steamer projections for Bowden Francis going into next year. Now, I've said this before, and I was going to write an article about this too, that I don't think the projections know what to do with a guy like Bowden Francis. Because, Jesse, like, think about his season he had last year, right? His first start in Houston, he got destroyed, right? I think he made a second start after that. It was bad, too. They immediately shipped him to the bullpen. Didn't pitch
that hurt.
The bullpen. He got hurt as well, right? And then he was down in Buffalo. But if you look at Bowden Francis' minor league stats, like, there was a stretch when he was in Buffalo, too, and I don't have him pulled up in front of me right now, but he was dominant. Dominant in Buffalo, right? Really, really good. Then came back up, pitched out of the bullpen, and also wasn't that good anymore. And then all of a sudden, the Blue Jays trade Yusei Kikuchi at the deadline, put him into the starting rotation, and he literally becomes the best hit suppressor pitcher the game has ever seen. So it reminds me a lot of Marco Estrada when he was here, right? The projection system never liked Marco Estrada because they saw a 92-mile-per-hour fastball, a changeup that's the metrics was good, but they didn't love. And yet Marco Estrada was one of the better pitchers through the mid-2010s that the Toronto Blue Jays have ever had. One of the best playoff pitchers the Blue Jays have ever had. And he was very, very good. And that's kind of where I'm thinking Bowden Francis can end up. Let's hear what you think, though, on Bowden Francis.
Well, you know what my thought, my opinion of him is high. Like last year when my prediction was top 10 Cy Young for him. Like, so I feel like what we saw in the second half is what I thought he would be. Obviously, I wasn't thinking he'll always throw a no-hitter. Like, no one thinks that one. But I felt like he was going to be, like, a low 3, high 2 ERA pitcher. And, like, and just be a consistent pitcher. And having, like, with that curveball and his off-speed stuff, like, now he implements splitter and all that, like, just getting those balls in the dirt and, like, just able to miss fast too with, like, even when he elevated his fastball and that, I feel like he will be that pitcher again. And then again, I feel like I will say it here again too. I still think maybe I was a year early. He'll be a top 10 Cy Young pitcher.
Jesse, I hope you're right. And the Blue Jays need a success story like this to come forward if we're going to have any chance at squeezing into the wild card spot here. They do have him second on the team in whip behind only Kevin Gausman, out of starters behind only Kevin Gausman, but I'll take the lower than a 124 whip, right? And I think the projections think too, Bowden Francis is going to give a lot more home runs. He did give up a few home runs last year, but think about some of the home runs he gave up. One was to Taylor Ward to end the no-hitter in the ninth, and the other one was to Francisco Lindor to also end a no-hitter in the ninth. And he also had a one-hitter in there where I think the only run he gave up was a solo home run as well. Like, if his home runs he's giving up are solo shots, then he's going to be fantastic. If there are two or three run home runs, because maybe he walks more batters than we think he might, then we're in trouble. But
like his first start Houston, where I feel like he, in the first inning, gave up like a 3-run shot to Yordan Alvarez. Like,
yes.
Like, but, who doesn't do that?
Exactly. So I agree with you there. I think we all think he's going to be better. I don't know if I think he's going to be quite that level a pitcher, but at the end of the season, okay, so right now, Bowden Francis probably lines in as our number four starting pitcher. At the end of the season, when we look back here, where does Bowden Francis rank in our pitching rotation?
If we don't have a surprise of, say, someone in the minors, like a Jake Bloss or like, or even the Mendoza comeback and like comeback and all that.
Right.
I feel like Bowden Francis could possibly be the starting pitcher, the opening starting pitcher for on opening day 2026. That's where he's going to finish.
Have a real good year then. I love the optimism, my guy. And let's end there, I think, on a little positive note for Bowden Francis here. Well, I guess we should touch on the bullpen just for a second. Jesse, just give me a name. Who leads the Blue Jays in saves, and how many saves do they get?
Now that Haydar's with the Mariners, so there goes that guess. I feel like it's going to be Chad Green will have the most saves, but he won't finish the season as a closer. I have a feeling that it's going to be Ricky Thiemann is going to be our new closer at the end of the year if he comes back from that Tommy John.
And the first lefty closer since what? BJ Ryan was here? We had lefty closers aren't really a thing, but I like where your head is.
Josh Hader.
Oh, yes, Josh Hader has done it. Yeah. Very similar arm slots for those two pitchers.
Exactly.
So maybe you could be on to something there. Chad Green's the right answer. I think Jimmy Garcia is going to be our best pitcher. I think those are the logical choices to make. But since you went a little wild, I'm going to go a little wild. I'm going to go Yariel Rodriguez leads the Blue Jays in saves. He's been a closer before. He was in Japan. If we add more to our starting rotation, or maybe just towards the end of the year, they want to limit his innings a little bit. Sneaky candidate. Not chalk by any means, but since we're going that route, I'm going to go with that.
Unless we sign like one of the Terrence Scott or Kenley Jansen who's still out there, but probably not.
All right, seems good to me, Jesse. Let's wrap there. Next episode, we'll talk a little bit more about some other projections that we like and we want to see, and obviously some more Blue Jays news that might come down because we're getting ever closer to spring training. It's coming, right? It'll be here before you know it. It's minus 17 outside right now. It'll be plus 17 and we'll be seeing videos of people working out and the Dunedin sun will be shining ever so brightly very, very soon as pitchers and catchers are probably, what, 5 weeks away now? We're getting close.
How close is your birthday? That's how I usually tell it now.
That's right. Pitchers and catchers usually do report on my birthday, which is in the middle of February. It's always the best birthday present I get every year. So I'm very thankful for that. Jesse, any last thoughts before we get out of here today? We got to wrap this up here. So.
Maybe minus 17 outside, but it's plus 17 in our hearts.
I love that. Beautiful, beautiful. Well said, my guy. The warmth is always going over here at Buds and Blue Jays. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Please make sure to like the video, subscribe to the channel, leave us a 5-star review, all that fun stuff. We are getting very excited for the start of the season, and we plan to have lots of content coming your way, all Blue Jays related, of course. For Jesse Tricio, I'm Jesse Burrell. Thank you all for watching, liking, and commenting, and we will see you all next week.
Thanks, guys.